Igniting Hope Ministries welcomes you. Prepare yourself to listen to a message that will spark hope and renew your mind.
We are so excited about this year. God's got some great and some fun things in store for us. And so we are going to start this year out with Steve Backlund from Igniting Hope Ministries.
Really exciting. Steve is a dear friend of ours, and he's the author of 14 books, speaker, enthusiast, hope igniter and releaser.
Big time.
As well as one of the best leader developers and mentors we've actually ever met.
Yep.
So the Backlunds really were senior pastors for about 17 years before joining Bethel Church, the team here in 2008. 10 of those years were spent on the backside of the desert in central Nevada, where they led their church into renewal, significant numerical growth, and positively affected their area.
And they really do have a message that ignites hope and joy everywhere they go. So they travel extensively to encourage and empower churches around the world and revival culture and victorious mindset. So it's really great to have you here with us, Steve. And right on the onset of New Year's, welcome.
Yay, I'm excited to be with you. And just Wendy and I love the both of you and what you carry. And it's an honor to partner with you in this, yes.
Really fun to have you with us.
Okay, you've always got a word. Mm. Steve, you always have a word. Steve Backlund. We've got two Steve B's here.
Yes.
Steve Backlund, you've always got a word for the moment, for the month, and I'm confident you've got one for the year. So what's your word for 2017?
Well, I mean, I believe 2017 is going to be a great year because we serve a God who moves from glory to glory. Mm-hmm. We also, it says in Isaiah 9, it says, of the increase of his government, there is no end. And so we know that this is a year of greater potential, greater possibilities and than ever before. And the one word I'm hearing, it's a year of supernatural solutions and supernatural strategies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm drawn to James 1:5, where it says, if any man lacks wisdom, and you know, wisdom can be, you know, translated or, you know, ideas, strategies, or a man doesn't know what to do. And it says, let him ask of God who gives generously without finding fault, and it will be given to him.
Yeah.
It will be given.
Right.
And I see the Lord this year with especially with his people, that there's going to be ideas that are going to come for long-standing issues of getting out of a negative and into what's called normal. But even more importantly, I see the Lord taking people like who are listening today and giving ideas of how to launch them into a new season of intimacy with the Lord and a new season of influence.
Yeah. Come on.
And I remember one person said, Steve, you don't need more money. You need a new idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I see that. I'm hearing that. I'm hearing it's a 1 Corinthians 10:13 year where that's one of the greatest hope promises in the Bible, where it says no temptation or no trial has come upon you except which is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you can bear, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape that you may be able to bear up under it. And so the way we bear up under it is that we know there's a way of escape.
Yeah. Come on.
We know there's a solution. We know there's a supernatural solution.
Yeah.
And one of Wendy's of my favorite phrases and beliefs is there is always a solution.
Right.
There's always, no matter whether we're $1 million in debt, we've have family, you know, crisis, or just got fired from our job, there's a solution and there's supernatural solutions.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hearing.
Oh, come on.
I love it.
I'm going to take it.
Yeah,
supernatural strategies and ideas.
Yeah.
Tell us about your most recent book.
Oh, wow. My most recent book is called The Culture of Empowerment, How to Champion People.
Yeah.
And that's one of my great passions is to figure out how I can champion the people around me and cause them to become what they never thought they could become and do what they never thought they could do. And it takes a quote from Bill Johnson, senior leader at Bethel Church, that really has hit me. This is the quote. He says, "My goal is not to build a big church, but it's to build big people."
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the book is really taking that concept and God's heart to empower us, mm-hmm. what beliefs we need to have mm-hmm. about the people in our life to empower them, empowering language. There's language that either empowers people or disempowers mm-hmm. people.
Right.
And so words are powerful.
Yeah.
And then just structures to in our leadership situations of how to create empowering structures. But more importantly, I'm trying to share how to become an empowering person, because mm-hmm. you don't need a title to empower people around you.
Right.
And so I did the book with my brother Phil and Melissa Amato, who's mm-hmm. been part of my team. But Phil wrote some significant chapters. He's got his PhD in speech communications and teaches at a university. And so
wow.
he brings in his academic angle
wow.
right.
with my more biblical-based church experience. But it's a great book for church leaders, business leaders, parents, people in relationships, husband and wife relationships. How do we actually empower each other?
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's really for, I'd say it's for everybody who wants to be an influencer.
So this
yeah.
sounds like a book we need to get. And when did it was recently released?
It's recently released.
Yeah.
It came out in late October
yeah.
at that time. And it's just now come out on Kindle.
Oh, wow.
And I should have brought one because I'd love to sew one into your lives.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to buy one yeah. and sew into yours.
Oh, well, then.
So people can get it on Amazon.
Amazon,
yeah.
It's
and
available
also your website?
Kindle, our website, ignitinghope.com. You
right.
can find a store there or at the Bethel store online.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, brilliant. Right. All right.
Oh, so good.
Well, that sounds great. I'm excited.
I am too.
Well, let's dive into some of the things we want to talk with you
mm-hmm.
about today. So really, Steve, as one who develops leaders, because that's what you do, what would be three or four key thoughts that you could give us regarding personal development and its importance?
Yeah, I think just a couple thoughts I have on that is one on personal development is to make your beliefs, put more priority on what you believe than what you do.
Right.
Right.
I think as a developer, you know, of myself and people, because the old covenant was more conduct focused, the new covenant is more belief focused.
Exactly.
Now, in Romans 12:2, it says, "Be transformed by the renewing of your mind."
Mm-hmm.
So, if we want to see transformation, whether it's in our own life or in our circumstances, it's going to come from believing something higher than we've believed in the past.
Right.
Now, the nature of faith is that you actually believe something that's not in your experience yet.
Exactly.
I used to say, well, Lord, you know, I'll actually believe something different when I see something different. And he said, hey, Steve, this isn't how this works.
Right.
Right.
This actually works. You have to believe something
yeah.
before you're going to see something different.
Right.
And that's, you know, it seems so elementary,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's so easy to miss
right.
as people who we want to do the right thing. We want to walk in integrity. We want to, you know, implement great strategies. But if we try to change our behavior without changing what we believe, we're going to have a problem.
Right.
So here, the key I found out is that I can't trust any belief that I have that doesn't have hope attached to it.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Lord said, Steve, I want you to use your hope level as the indicator of whether you're believing lies or truth.
Right.
And you got great hope in an area, you're believing truth. You don't have much hope, you're believing lies. Now, when I first learned this, that was really discouraging. Because I realized I was believing so many lies.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much everything I believed in my life was a lie, and I was pastoring a church.
I remember hearing a story that you told in one of your messages that when you first started going after this, the biggest mistake you made was to ask the Lord to reveal every lie to you that
yeah.
you were believing.
That one, I should have prayed, Lord, show me 10% of the lies
yeah.
I'm believing.
Right.
And because really, I mean, the only time I really thought right when I was under the manifest presence of God.
Mm. Right.
Then I thought right. Yes, amen, I got
yeah.
the victory.
Yeah, yeah.
But outside of the manifest presence, I was pessimistic, critical, insecure, worried. And so the Lord is basically, no, you got to go after what you believe.
Right. So good.
And Romans 15:13 says, now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing.
Right.
Yeah.
That you may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. And so if you boil that verse down, it means now may the God of hope fill you in believing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I believe truth, my hope level's rising.
Come on.
And so that was transformational. And I really felt like the Lord told me, he said, Steve, our hope level, our hope level determines our influence level.
Yeah.
So after love, hope, in my opinion, is the greatest leadership influential quality we can have.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's not just something we pump up. It comes from believing truth. So I'd say that's the first one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Believing truth. You know, even with this whole area of hope, I love the fact that you say a lot that there's no hopeless situations, only hopeless people.
Right.
And it's because of the belief issue, the faith, you know, extending faith in that, in what you're believing, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, because the Lord basically told Wendy and I, Steve and Wendy, you can be hopeless about anything that I'm hopeless about.
Right.
Gotcha.
I know. And we've never once said, Lord, are you hopeless about that? Never once have we heard him say, well, yes, there are no solutions to that. Oh, so it really it was transformational to me to make my hopelessness a bigger enemy to me than devil.
Right.
It broke off victim mentalities because I used to think I was a victim of the devil, people in my life, my past. And Lord said, no, you're not a victim of those things. You're just a victim of your beliefs.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So what would be another key?
All right. Another key is to think long term.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Love that.
Now, God is a long-term thinker.
Yeah.
I tend to be a short-term thinker.
Totally.
If it's not happening this week, I'm a failure.
Let's just laugh at that.
Laugh at that. But the Lord thinks generational.
Yeah. Yes.
He thinks through genealogies. He's positioning his purposes long-term.
Yeah.
But he's also thinking long-term about us.
Right.
Because he's more concerned about the minister than the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's more concerned about what's happening in me, in me, than what's happening through me.
Yeah. Right?
Because his answer, you know, when people cry out, God, do something, his answer is always sending a man or a woman or a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his answer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he usually sends people who don't think they're qualified to do what he's sending them to do.
Yeah. Right.
He has a habit of doing that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, say, well, you're ready. Moses, it's you. No, I can't talk.
Yeah.
I stutter. Gideon, it's you. Nope, I came from a bad family. And so I think thinking long term, because God, right now, even everybody who's listening, the Lord is preparing us for something greater in the future.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's called vision.
Exactly. Right.
Without a vision, the people perish.
Yeah. Mm.
And so the more vision I have for the future is the more purpose I have for the present.
Come on.
So I understand, okay, I'm being prepared for something, then everything in my life right now is really literally training.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm in training of how to go to another level for what's ahead in my life.
Yeah. Right.
That perspective absolutely empowers us with grace to embrace the difficult things that are
coming.
That's
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the difficult person in my life, I'm in training of how to relate to that type of situation, because where I'm going, that skill set is going to make such a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay, so that's two. Number three, give us another one.
Yeah. Here's another one. It may seem very basic to develop. It's just love people.
Yeah.
I mean, love people.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to influence that which you don't love.
Right.
And you look at 1 Corinthians 13, and right in the beginning of the chapter, it lists about five different things, like the who's who of supernatural revivalists.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking in the tongues of men of angels, understanding all, having all knowledge and understanding all mysteries, burned alive for the faith, giving everything away.
Right.
And then these things are, wow. And then it says, but in all of that, it says, if you have not love, it's a big zero.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting. All right, Lord, what is this heavy duty revelation about this love. I'm waiting for something really profound. And then it says, love is patient.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Love is kind.
Yes.
Love, you know, bears with things. Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. Love is not easily provoked. I mean, you know, love is not rude.
Right. Yeah.
All the things. And I remember just years ago, the Lord just says, I want you to camp in 1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want you to get it in your spirit.
Yeah.
Because the greatest love is relational.
Yeah. Yes.
And the greatest love is to just go after health in your relationships and become the healthy one.
Right.
Yes.
And so if we're going to change our own life, if we're going to rise up, you know, to be an influencer or influence others, it really has to come from a priority that I'm actually prioritizing love. And it can be missed in our zeal.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, Dustin, our son, our younger son, he posted something on Facebook during all the political campaigning, you know, when there was kind of crazy stuff that was being put out there, you know. He said, I'm choosing to keep my love. How did he say it?
He said, my love switch is broken
in the on position. And I grabbed a hold of that because I just felt like that is such a visual for me that when I'm tempted to measure my love based on someone's behavior or performance. It's like, no, actually, my love switch is completely broken, and it's broken in the on position.
Yeah.
So, you know, just loving people well. That's amazing.
And just liking people.
Yeah, that's so good.
You know, I mean, just I think that's where you just our relationships, we can never. That's why I love your ministry. You know, and your ministry is so important because we can never spend too much time on having quality relationships.
Exactly. Which, and there's something I was just going to say added. Yeah. There's just something beautiful that the Lord will show you about people that will empower you. You know, to like them.
Yes.
You know, so that's what we get to focus on. I really like this about this individual, you know, and God will endear them to your heart through your choice to focus on,
absolutely,
you know, on that. That's awesome.
Positive aspects, yeah. Which is great segue, actually, into the next question we wanted to ask you, because as a leader who really does develop people, and more than just people, you're actually developing leaders. But what would a couple of really important relationship skills be for you to have personally developed as a one who's developing people?
Yeah. And it really ties into what we're just saying, you know, love believes all things, love hopes all things in 1 Corinthians 13. And the first thing I would say is to believe in people.
Right.
To believe in people.
Wow.
And, you know, the culture of empowerment book, that's probably one of the most important concepts that we release in the book. Is to have to be believed in. And one of the roles of leaders, one of the greatest roles of leaders is to believe in the people that they lead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any influencer, whether it's a parent, you know, we want to influence our spouse, we have a group of people that we're assigned to, people we work with. Any influencer, that is something that's one of the most important things we could do. I grew up not having a lot of people believe in me. And, and you know, I joke, you know, people told me what was wrong with me. My friends would tell me my physical defects.
Yeah.
They would point those out. My friends would, if I, you know, did anything stupid, would, you know, make sure I was aware of that.
Right.
Very few people. I had a 12th grade, I had a government teacher. I was fairly outwardly successful in sports and all that. I had a 12th grade government teacher took about 30 seconds to a minute and said something to me. She said, I see, Steve, you'd be good in politics and government.
Wow.
And I had so lack of people really believing in me and saying, I see something in you that I literally majored in political science based on one comment that somebody made. And I determined, I look back on that, and especially when I met the Lord, I determined that I was going to believe in people.
Mm-hmm.
I determined that I was going to be, you know, like the angel came to Gideon in Judges 6 and said, oh, mighty man of valor. He believed in Gideon more than he believed in himself. And I said, I'm going to become the angel.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to tell people what's good in their life. I'm going to see them. And, you know, we grew up, I mean, we pastored in a gold mining community. in Nevada, and they were an open pit mine, and they moved tons of dirt
yeah.
every day, but nobody talked about the dirt. They only talked about the gold.
Right.
And Wendy and I said, we're gonna believe there's gold in every person we see,
mm-hmm.
and people won't mind you moving their dirt mm-hmm. if they believe that you believe there's gold
yeah,
in them.
Yeah.
Oh, so looking for the gold.
Looking for the gold.
And speaking it out.
Speaking it out.
There's power in our words, isn't
yes.
there? Yeah. Wow. Okay. Another one.
All right.
Yeah.
And this is just. Seek to understand before you seek to be understood.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a great, great principle of
yes.
of influence.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm sure most of the people listening, I mean, they're just people you wanna influence.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. it.
Your heart is to make a difference in this world. And yet I've noticed this, that if we make our priority to be understood before understanding,
mm-hmm.
whether you're a church leader, whether you're trying to share the gospel with people, whether you're trying to influence a family member, if we think we understand where people are coming from, or if we believe our assignment is to change people
right.
prior to understanding people,
yeah.
We're really going to miss one of the most important things to do.
That's
right.
It. Yeah, because one of the greatest gifts that we give to anybody is the gift of understanding them.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's all about knowing them. And when we feel known, we feel loved.
We feel valued.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Someone, one of the ways to do that is just to become a great question asker.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we can all, you know, just ask great questions. You know, what makes you come alive? Tell me your story. How'd
right.
you get to
yeah.
where, you know, tell me your, what are you passionate about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
we begin to understand. And I believe, you know, just, and by seeking to understand people, we're going to expand the type of people that we're going to be able to ultimately influence.
Right.
Totally.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
even in a point of conflict, if that actually becomes our goal, is to understand what's going on rather than to judge the situation, if we
yeah.
really seek for understanding, 9 times out of 10, our response is going to be totally different.
Yeah.
We have understanding.
And I learned this pastoring, you know, let's just laugh at this. I had people in my church who sometimes would irritate me.
No way.
No. I would be leading.
But
once I heard their story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Once I said, just tell me what, you know, like I had people who their yeah. response to God was so demonstrative. They were noisy. They
yeah.
were at times disruptive. And then I heard their story. This one lady's story, she said, I got delivered from this and this and this. Mm. And God, Jesus did this for me. And once I heard my compassion,
right.
I understand. And then I could redirect her a little bit. Hey, you know, but it came from a point.
Yeah.
I actually value you.
Mm.
I wish I had 50 of you.
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, when you were talking about learn to be one who asks questions, one of the things that we often tell couples, one of the best questions you can learn to ask your spouse is tell me more.
Mm.
Tell me more. I mean, in the context of any relationship, really, but, you know, just tell me more about that. Tell me more about
yeah.
that. And just it's like being able to dig a little deeper. Let's go a little bit deeper,
mm.
you know.
God gave us 2 ears and
yeah.
one mouth.
That's right.
That maybe should tell us something.
It should.
Okay, maybe
yeah.
let's go for one more. One more important relationship skill.
I think one more skill is humility
mm.
and the ability to say, I was wrong
mm-hmm.
and I am sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those words
yeah.
are just so powerful
mm-hmm.
and I just know that just walking in, because pride, you know, God opposes the pride, but he gives grace to the humble. People oppose the proud and give grace
right.
to the humble.
Right.
And so I think that's just such an important thing. And I'm not saying become a doormat for people or just that. But I think that's something that I know for me personally and probably for most of us, that's sometimes hard to do.
Yeah.
Right.
To just own our, you know, if we think we're 15% of the problem,
mm-hmm.
to own it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a great principle, you know, take the speck out of, you know, the log out of your own eye. And Jesus said, before you try to take the telephone pole out of your brother's eye.
Right.
And I used to complain to God, you know, I'd complain. I'd say, hey, Lord, every time I try to, you know, tell you to fix Wendy.
Mm-hmm. Let's just laugh.
Yes. I want her to be different. Yeah. You always talk to me about something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm trying to talk to you about them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it comes back. Wow. Once I actually deal with some of the things in my own life and I take the log out of my eye, I can see clearly, okay, even where there needs to be brave communication, even where there needs to be, you know what, you know, share something really, you know, maybe would be uncomfortable,
right.
I can see more clearly in doing that.
Yeah.
So good. So good. Oh, that's great. Well, listen, what would you say has been some of your own personal challenges in developing as a leader? And how really did you overcome that? How did you work through that?
All right, I've got two that come to my mind on that. One is to overcome victim mentality.
Yeah. And that's a tough one. That is so common. Mm-hmm.
It is.
And it manifests in a lot of different ways.
Oh, you know? Yeah. It does. It's hard to... It's hard to be a leader. You can't really lead if you're a victim, if you have a victim mentality, because whatever you're a victim of is leading you.
Totally. Right. Oh, that's good.
It's leading you. That's actually the leading. You know, I used to, as a leader in church, I used to think I was a victim of the people. You know, if I had better people.
Exactly.
And the Lord says, hello, now they're leading you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have stopped leading. They're actually dictating your victory, and you've come under the lie that if they would change, you could actually rise up.
Right.
And become something.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we're not, it may feel like it at times. We're a victim of other people's perceptions of us. Mm-hmm. We're a victim of our finances. We're a victim of a bad past. I mean, the Lord, he said, Steve, nobody's past can stop anybody, but current beliefs can.
Right.
So even no matter how bad our past is, ultimately we are not a victim of our past. We're a victim of the conclusions we've made about ourselves based on the past.
That is so good. So it's based on the conclusions we've made about ourselves.
The past doesn't have the power to stop us, but our current beliefs do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think... Because I wish I would be like Bill Johnson. He's a fifth-generation pastor's son. If I could just be like Bill instead of a first-generation, insecure, burnout, paranoid hippie. I got some issues. That's just because I wasn't raised.
Right.
And because of some of the choices I made, because I didn't, you know, those sometimes still want to crop up. But those don't. They're not my problem.
Right.
Right.
It's what I believe.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So obviously in overcoming that victim mindset and thinking and behavior is really looking at addressing our beliefs.
It comes right back to that.
Yeah.
It does.
And do they inspire hope?
Do they inspire hope? And victim mindsets are hopeless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really true. One of the words that we often connect with being a victim is that feeling or that sense of being completely powerless.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I have no power in this situation. That's the mindset of being a victim.
Because our hopelessness about a problem is a bigger problem than the problem.
There you go.
Whether we feel hopeless about our finances, hopeless in relationships, hopelessness because of what our government is doing, hopeless because of leadership, maybe in church or whatever, that we're not agreeing with. Our hopelessness is a bigger problem. And when we begin to address that, because that hopelessness is a victim, is the fruit of a victim mentality.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes, again, it feels like, wow, there are no solutions. But you're coming back to the word even I shared about this year, there is always
a solution.
And the brain, here's the way the brain works. If the brain doesn't believe there's a solution, it won't look for one.
Right.
Right.
And yeah. once it actually believes there's a solution, then it's almost like this heavenly search engine that just begins to search and find solutions where we never saw them before.
Yes, the reticular activator. Is that what it is that what
Ooh,
it's called?
I like that. Yeah. Reticular activator.
Yeah, it literally goes out and starts searching.
Mm-hmm. And I think another just a challenge that I've had is the fear of failure.
Oh, wow.
A fear of failure. And, you know, I used to think a good year was not having failed. And then the Lord says, hey, Steve, but you didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
No risk. you were being pretty safe.
I was being safe.
Yeah. Wow.
And in that, because I think whether it's religious mindsets or maybe we've grown up in performance-based homes, mm-hmm. The failure was really to be avoided, or, you know, the fear of embarrassment, mm-hmm. of looking like a fool. So I found myself coming into this self-protectionism mode of just doing things. And really, the Lord just blasted me out of that. He showed me Matthew 25, the parable of the talents, mm-hmm. where you got the three people, one given five, one given two talents, one given one. And the one who really was afraid of failure, the one who didn't want to do anything, the one who was passive, was not celebrated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the two and the five had to find divine strategies for increase. And I believe this, those who succeed most also seem to fail most.
Mm-hmm.
Winston Churchill said this, success is moving from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm.
Oh, wow.
Moving from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm.
Oh, that's powerful.
Wow.
Mm. And God's process is, watch babies, you watch toddlers. What if they determine their future by their past?
Exactly.
I've never walked before, therefore I'm not a walker. God has not given me the gift of walking. That's just stupid.
Yeah, it is.
But I carried that into my life.
Wow.
Because people haven't got healed in the past. When I prayed for them, I concluded I don't have the gift of healing.
Right.
Or when I first started speaking in front of people, it was so hard. I struggled and I was so nervous. And I could have concluded I don't have the gift.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Most people have to work through seasons of difficulty and feeling like a failure on the journey of doing things well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even in relationships, learning how to communicate or share feelings.
That's a big one, huh?
I know, for us guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still learning that one. Or conflict resolution. So many of these things that we'll do at first, I'm not good at that. No, we can't make those concluding statements.
There you go. Because
if I make a concluding statement,
you're coming into agreement with that.
I'm actually renewing my mind with a lie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Based on my experience, rather than based on what God has said I can do.
Yeah.
And then I call it a personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I call it a personality defect.
Yes. That's who I am.
Yeah. Becomes an excuse to stay that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Or my spiritual gift mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that is just something. I love the culture that, you know, we have here in Igniting Hope and at Bethel. It's a culture of faith and risk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're trying things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to experiment.
Yeah. Go big or go home.
Yes. That is so true. So that's a second one that the fear of failure and still that, you know, I battle that at times, but I've made a lot of progress and anybody that I could influence, like my first book, you know, was on many levels of failure in its appearance. The cover was bad. It was not fancy on the inside. And, you know, Lorraine, you've helped in upgrade to our books.
Yeah.
But our first book was very plain, had some typos in it, but it changed the world.
It right. did.
People yeah. got a hold of it.
Exactly. What was your first book?
It was called Igniting Faith in 40 Days.
Yeah. That's right. And you guys have a whole thing you do every year.
Every year.
A campaign.
For Lent, we yes. do a negativity fast for mm-hmm. 40 days using that book, a negativity fast and a positivity feast.
Yeah. Come on.
And it's actually a beliefs. It's a 40-day mini renewing the mind beliefs mini school.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Because it's more than just, you know, fasting negativity. It's actually how to think right and believe mm-hmm. right, how to talk
totally.
Right.
And yeah. we've run into people in our travels internationally that are either have just finished the fast feast or they're getting ready to start it.
Right.
And it's just really fun to see how broadly around the world that book has reached.
And yeah, and it'll start this year right at the beginning of March
mm-hmm. yep.
for Lent. So the timing of this is very good. You can get on our website, ignitinghope.com, mm-hmm. and there's going to be some information about that.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome.
Really, really good.
Well, what are some common issues that you that you've seen in leaders? Because you've been working with leaders for how many years, Steve?
Well, 35 years.
Yeah. And been running and a significant part of the leadership development program through Global Legacy
at Bethel Church.
That's
yes.
right. Mm-hmm. And so you've obviously seen probably common issues with leaders that interfere with them building healthy teams and being successful in leadership.
Yes.
Yeah. What would some of those common issues? I mean, obviously, we've been talking probably about a lot of them.
They could fit
overlap,
into this. But
yeah.
but
yeah.
I did. I just as I was thinking about this, I, there's a few things that have come to my mind. One is a common issue is using people instead of building people.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's huge.
Now that goes back to what we were saying. You know, I was talking about my latest book, The Culture of Empowerment, mm-hmm. and Bill Johnson's quote: "My goal is not to build a big church, but to build big people."
Right.
Now in you know, just in controlling environments or slave, you know, performance environments, really the focus a lot is that the leaders are to use people to accomplish the leader's vision.
Right.
And so it isn't so much of an inspiring environment, it's more of a Christian obligation based on guilt and this is what good Christians do.
Right.
Focus.
Yeah.
And I believe that empowering leaders concerning behavioral issues spend 80% of their time telling people who they are and 20% telling them what to do.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
80% telling people who they are and 20%
yes,
what to
because
do.
Because it's very difficult to consistently do what we don't believe we are.
That's
right.
It.
So
because our doing really does flow out of our being.
It does.
Yeah.
Because if I'm trying to act righteous, but I believe I'm a sinner, I'm actually in disunity with me.
Come mm-hmm. on.
I do believe that this really relates to using people because if we don't mm-hmm. believe our people have greatness in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we think that they're prone to sin as sinners instead of prone to righteousness and powerful influences as saints,
mm-hmm. right.
then it's going to affect everything. So
yeah.
that's, I believe that leaders should create win-win in relationships.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That leaders in their relationships with those they're leading, certainly there needs to be a buy-in that person has to the leader and a commitment to them. But the leader also needs to be committed to understanding the person who's there, understanding their gifts, understanding their dreams,
mm-hmm.
and then figuring out how they, as the leader, can become a catalytic in causing that person to become what they never thought they could become.
That's amazing.
You know, even that the principle of actually really speaking to them in terms of who they are rather than what they're doing, even if it's an issue of conflict or there needs to be an adjustment where you're actually needing to confront something that hasn't gone
yes.
well, that same principle is what's going to make it easier, not always easy, but easier to actually call them up to who they are rather than just trying to make point out what they've done wrong. And, you know, it's not punitive at that point. It actually is building them back up to show them this isn't who you are. This is who you are.
And so, that's so good. And that's yeah. really part of what, you know, we call a prophetic culture and prophesying, like the angel prophesied to Gideon, you're a mighty man of valor.
Right.
He told him, you know, who he was, which began the breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And it's really, in correction or conflict resolution, basically you're saying where you're going, you can't take this with you.
That's right. So exactly. Good.
You're too great to be doing this thing.
That's it.
Yeah. I see it in you. Yeah. And it comes that's back right. to that belief.
Yeah. Well,
so good.
Another one.
Another one is insecurity in a leader.
Wow.
And, you know,
insecurity.
I've at times definitely struggled with insecurity. You get powerful people around you and the insecurity of leadership at times doesn't want people more powerful around them than they are.
Right.
Which then limits the type of person who can get attracted to that leader. Mm-hmm. And I just think I can tell you just even in my own experience with my wife, Wendy, she is becoming increasingly powerful. And, you know, and I love it. Maybe 20 years ago, I would have struggled with that. Mm-hmm. Wow, you know, she's actually, you know, this is moving in a direction where I might be known as Wendy Backlund's husband.
So be it, Lord. Yeah.
I think you have kind of the same problem,
exactly.
Steve. It's a problem. It's the same issue.
The same issue, that's right.
But insecurity of being hypersensitive to criticism, being competitive with other ministries or other leaders who are in our same thing.
Comparing is a killer, isn't it?
It really is. It actually makes us small on the inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if we're small on the inside, we're going to have difficulty attracting big people to us.
Right.
And I remember the Lord, he said, Steve, your response to something is almost always more important than the something. Mm-hmm. Because your response to what's going on around you is reflecting how prosperous your soul is.
Right.
And 3 John verse 2 says, Beloved, I pray that you prosper and be in health. And then, you know, you be in health and prosper in all things, even as your soul prospers.
Right.
And so insecurity is a sign of my soul not prospering. And again, all of us are still insecure about something.
Yeah.
I just want to lower my insecurity levels because I know as I lower them and they become and I go after the lies that are fueling that insecurity, then I'm going to become stronger as a leader. I'm going to influence a broader type of person.
And right. God's going to always give us opportunities, Steve, to identify places and areas in our life where he's seeking to upgrade us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're all believing lies. That's that I'm still believing lies about areas. I just am believing less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And insecurity is one of the hopelessness is a sign of there's a lie, but also when insecurity pops up in a relationship, in when I'm in a room with a certain type of people, okay, Lord, what are you doing? What is that?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Another one,
okay.
A common issue that interfere with building healthy teams and successful leadership is just, and we've touched on this, is not prioritizing relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, just spending time, like, again, it starts with the marriage. Wendy's and the health of our marriage today is the result of prioritizing it yesterday.
Yeah. Right.
Of spending time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Stephen Covey, he's got the four quadrants of time management.
Exactly.
And two of them, which we spend the most time in. Well, the one I used to spend the most time in and sometimes still do, is the urgent but not important.
Right.
But the quadrant that's the most important one is the important and non-urgent.
Yeah.
And that usually has to do with taking care of me, taking care of my relationships. And leadership teams, if we're too busy to spend time together, we're too busy.
That's it.
Because ultimately, if we don't spend time now, we'll have to spend time later.
Right.
And that spending time together isn't always doing. It's not always working.
No.
Doing the ministry, is it?
No.
No, it's laughing. It's doing fun things together. It's going places, encountering, and just sharing life.
And we saw an example of that even with you. Some of the pictures that were on Facebook this last week with your team and your interns, and you had everybody. You were having a blast.
Yeah, like, we had funny glasses exactly. on. We did skits. I believe the team that laughs together is going to have a greater likelihood of staying together.
That's right. So good.
And it is. It's just, it's eating together. Mm. It's figuring out how to do things with people. It's fun things. Hey, I'm doing a ministry trip. I'm going to take people with me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. it's relationship conscious. And I think sometimes in revival culture, we get so excited about the meetings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What God's doing.
Yeah.
Right.
That we don't focus on relationships.
Yeah, we interviewed Jessica and Ahab Al-Hindi, some dear friends of ours here in Reading that have a restaurant, a couple of them now.
Yes.
And they talked about this very thing. And, of course, you are one of their mentors.
He was one of my interns.
And Ahab said, one of my mentors taught me how to have fun and have relationship with my team. And they talked about with their employees, they've just really created a family, that all their staff has become their family. Mm-hmm. And they even all go to the same sports center. So they work out together, and he'll call several guys saying, hey, I'm going to go over and shoot some hoops. Come join me. Mm-hmm. You know, so just that being together, playing together, having fun together. Wow.
Yeah,
being relational.
Because God's kingdom is first family,
right? Yeah.
You know, in the Lord's Prayer, it says, our Father.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say our master, our mm-hmm. Lord, our dictator, our God. It says our Father. And that is at the basis, I believe, of successful leadership. And then the last one I wanted to mention about building healthy teams and successful leadership that is a common issue is poor communication skills.
Yeah, that's a huge one,
poor
Steve.
Poor communication. Just, you know, whether it's learning how to communicate announcements as a church leader to how to actually communicate value to people who are on your team, mm-hmm. of just sending them messages, you're important, you know, just taking the time of sending I need you messages, I really need you,
to
communicating that I really care about you as a total person, not just what you can do for me.
Right.
Yeah.
To even simple things as how to write emails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would seem like a no-brainer. But because so much can be misunderstood.
Yes.
In writing an email, that's an important skill.
Yeah, what kind of things not to do in emails?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's certain things you're not going to do in an email and in a text.
Right. Exactly.
They're hard issue things. Mm-hmm. They're like you say, they could be easily misunderstood.
Right.
Between the lines. And when just not to send an email when you're angry, when you're lonely, tired, just not to communicate and not to trust yourself. You know, probably this isn't a good time for me to give my great opinion.
Yeah.
on this situation.
Yeah. It's interesting because when we talk with teams about communication, we talk about this very area about what kind of things should and shouldn't be in a text, should and shouldn't be in an email, because of our communication, only 7% is in our words.
Yes.
38% is in tone and emotion. And 55% is in attitude and physiology.
We need to hear that over and over, don't we?
Yeah, and when we can't see someone's face, we can easily misinterpret the heart behind the words that we're reading in a text or in an email.
Yeah, you're familiar with Lance Well. Now, he gave an example about with his PA, I guess the cap locks was broken.
On
the guy's phone. So he was sending Lance all these texts, and everything was in capital letters. And Lance was like, I felt like he was yelling at me all the time. It just doesn't work, you know? So we have to be careful, and we have to actually get some skill and understanding about what's appropriate and what's not, how to work with it.
So
communication is huge.
Yeah, so some of these common issues, using people versus building people, our own personal insecurity, Not prioritizing relationship. I had a question there I wanted to ask you, Steve.
Okay.
People in ministry are the busiest people we have ever met.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like with business, you know, you leave the business and you go home. And it seems easier to disconnect from work, you know, or a business, an office, and come home and disconnect from that than if you are in ministry, because ministry is always about people.
Right.
And so how do you, for your team that's already so busy, how do you find time that doesn't feel like another demand when you want to build relationship, but it doesn't feel like you're pulling on them for more time?
That's a great question. And I think, obviously, we need, especially us in ministry, people ministry, we need time alone. We need to learn how to set healthy boundaries
right.
and just, you know, and how to recharge. And but one of the things that I've done is, I mean, besides just creatively figuring out in the schedule, when can we get together? When can I do things with people? When can we have fun? We just make sure we schedule it. But I believe one of the keys is learning how to maximize small moments we have with people.
Wow.
Okay.
Really good.
Give us an example.
Okay. Now, I learned this. I think when you pastor a church, it's something that you can learn, need to learn, because let's say before a church service, you have 10 minutes of mingling with people.
Right.
You're walking around, you know, Betty, it's great to see you again. George, wow, you know, just, and I really worked on that of how to actually make people seen by me and how to place value and how to just really release love to people in moments. And I think one of the things that I believe we can learn is how to really cause people to feel seen by us. Mm-hmm. You know, because so we can walk down a hall and sometimes we want to protect ourselves, you know, so we don't make eye contact. So there have been times I need to do that.
Yeah.
But more times than not, you can actually, in just brief moments, express value to people.
Mm-hmm.
So good to see you. Hi, you know, just if you know somebody's name, you know, saying their names, just trying to remember names. If you can remember a detail about somebody, you know, wow, you know, just you told me about, you know, your brother who, you know, is in the hospital. And sometimes we have so many people we can't remember that. But I do believe it's more of a heart thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we have the heart for people, then people feel valued by us. They feel even connected to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's times where, I mean, with my team, I have to tell them, you know, I'm not going to be able to be with you all the time, but I tell them frequently, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you as a team. I'm so thankful for you. And it's those heart expressions that can make up for a lot of maybe not a lot of time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
good. That's really good.
Well, you know, just hearing this is so really, really good. And people that are working to, you know, build teams and build healthy leadership principles, this is going to be a great way to start the year, just going through these. Obviously, we're going to have some of these in the show notes they can refer to. But Steve, it would be great if, just before we go, if you could maybe just take a couple of moments and just release a couple of declarations to our listeners that are, you know, just launching into this new year with you know, some power and hope, because that's what you give.
You
that's what you launch people with.
And one of my books, too, the Declarations, Unlocking Your Future, has some powerful declarations about relationships in there.
It's a brilliant book.
And it'll also give us 30 biblical reasons why we make declarations. So if there's anybody listening who say, well, what's a declaration? I say this, a declaration is a faith statement about what's true, whether it's in our experience yet or not.
Right.
And in the worlds were created with a declaration, let there be light. Jesus started his ministry with a declaration in Luke 4, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me. He has anointed me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, some declarations that I would just say, even over this this new year. Mm-hmm. I believe this because the life is in the power of the tongue. Yeah. It says in Proverbs 18:21 that even saying this is going to be a great year in my life, mm-hmm. even saying that it increases the percentage chances yeah. of it being a great year.
Come on. Yeah.
I tell people you're not going to have something just by saying something.
Right.
But saying something is necessary to having something.
Yeah.
If we're going to experience something different, we need to say something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so just I just make this declaration over you. This is a year of breakthrough. This is a year of increased healthy relationships.
Yeah. Mm.
This is a year of supernatural strategies and ideas from God of long-standing issues in your life. This is a year of increased influence in through you to people that is going to be surprising to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say that over your ministry as well here. Wow. And I declare over you the goodness of God, that yeah. you will see the goodness of God in the land of the living this year. Mm-hmm. And surely goodness and mercy will follow you and will catch up to you.
Come on.
This year. And I declare that the joy of the Lord is your strength.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a merry heart is good medicine. And that the revelation of the goodness of God and the joy of the Lord is going to just resonate in your spirits and influence people like never before.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amen. Boy, we grab that and we just say yes and amen.
Yeah, that
so
is really great, Steve.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun. Always fun with Steve. I don't think we're ever together with you when we are not laughing.
Well, yeah, we usually have a good... and they, if they want more of our ministry, Igniting Hope Ministries is the place
yes,
to go, ignitinghope.com. I do a 60-second daily hope injection.
And it's good.
A video that's on Igniting Hope Instagram and Igniting Hope Facebook.
Right.
And it's just a fun thing just to give a little boom, an injection. Because I'll tell you, you start going after beliefs. You need you need that injection. I know I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Regularly. Their website is full and loaded with resources, blog, video, teaching, and you can get access to all of his books there. So he's mentioned it before. Also, Wendy's materials.
Oh, yes.
She's got one book already out, and she's getting ready to...
Another one is coming out. It will come out early, maybe spring of 2017. It's called Victorious Emotions.
Oh, wow.
I cannot wait.
Just hearing that.
Yeah.
Title, I get excited.
Yeah, this is going to be amazing. So, ignitinghope.com.
We hope that you have been blessed by this message. For more resources, you can visit our website at ignitinghope.com.